Maestro Torres with La Bruja Negra, the Black Witch. That's not a reference to me. Of course not. This is Lee's Stories. I'm Eutrice Lee. It's Wednesday, January the 30th, and lots to talk about. First up, we'll be talking about an effort to block the president's next nominee up for confirmation. Senator John Kerry handily won confirmation yesterday as Secretary of State, succeeding Hillary Clinton, who, by the way, is on tour. She's doing her exit tour, running around the country, basically making sure that she says goodbye to everyone in great rock star style. But the president's nominee for defense secretary, Chuck Hagel, won't have an easy time when he comes before the Senate. And that's because Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, the Republican, says he intends to block Hagel's appointment because the Obama administration has not been forthcoming about the terrorist attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi last September the 11th. Referring specifically to Clinton's delayed testimony last week before separate panels in the House and Senate probing the catastrophe that claimed the lives of four Americans, Ambassador Christopher Stevens included, Graham said, quote, "She got away with murder," unquote. Here's Graham speaking to Fox News' Greta Van Susteren about what he intends to do. Okay, we're having some trouble accessing that, and hopefully that would get fixed in a minute. But he outlines in a conversation with Greta Van Susteren of Fox News what his opinion was of Hillary Clinton's testimony, and in fact, he says he is going to do everything he possibly can to block Hagel's nomination. Now, are we ready for the clip? Oh, we're having trouble with the clip, so we'll get back to it in a minute. Clinton, as you know, consistently had said, both publicly and in her testimony before the House and Senate, that the intelligence about what was going on, the attack, intelligence about the attack was not immediately available. And what was available was kind of confusing, and not the State Department was not in a position to corroborate anything on the ground, what's going on. But let's first hear Graham talking with Greta Van Susteren. Ready
for
now.
Secretary of Defense, how are you going to vote on that one?
It will depend on what he says at the hearing Thursday, but the one thing I'm not going to do is vote on a new Secretary of Defense until the old Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, who I like very much, testifies about what happened in Benghazi. I haven't forgotten about Benghazi. Hillary Clinton got away with murder, in my view. She said they had a clear-eyed view of the threats. How could you have a clear-eyed view of the threats in Benghazi when you didn't know about the ambassador's cable coming back from
Libya?
Well,
you guys had 10 hours with her.
All I can say is, our guys tried to ask questions. She was very good on her feet deflecting these questions, but she said two things that will come back to haunt her: that they had a clear-eyed assessment of the threats in Libya, and that they had close contact with the Libyan government. I don't believe either one of them.
Is Secretary Panetta going to testify?
I'm not going to vote. I'm going to block Hagel from going forward until he does. Absolutely. Why would we not want to understand what happened during the attack itself? How could our secretary, what happened for 7 hours? Why were there no military assets available on September 11th to help these
people? Why has he been called by the House?
I have no idea why he hadn't been called by the House. But what did the president do? When did the president first get notified of the attack on our consulate? What did he do for those 7 hours? What? If he did order assets to go in to help these people, when did he give the order, and what did he say when they told him, there's nothing we can do?
Senator, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. That was Senator Graham swearing on everything that is holy that this next nomination is going to meet with some resistance, and he's going to insist that Leon Panetta, who is, of course, the Secretary of Defense, that he must appear before the committee and explain what happened at Benghazi. He said, to repeat, Hillary Clinton got away with murder. Now, Hillary Clinton consistently had said, and she said it both publicly in her and in her testimony before the House and Senate committees, that intelligence was not immediately available because the situation was just so chaotic, and the attack was just so unanticipated, and people were scrambling, and they could not ascertain immediately, and they could not confirm even the reports that they got, the initial reports that they got. And so all of that basically amounted to the fact that what the nation was told might have seemed confusing. Well, here is Hillary Clinton talking to CNN's Jill Daugherty and Elise Labatt about what she initially said she had no information about.
Benghazi, there have been a lot of questions. You've answered a lot of questions. But there's one in particular. You know, the signs were there. The British ambassador had been attacked. The walls of the embassy had been breached. Why didn't you connect the dots? Ask the question, wasn't it too dangerous for Chris Stevens, the ambassador, who was one of the most valuable people you had in that region? Why didn't you ask those questions?
Well, we were certainly aware of the increasing threat environment. I not only was briefed on that, I testified to that effect. And there were constant evaluations going on. But no one, not the ambassador, security professionals, the intelligence community, ever recommended closing that mission. And the reason they didn't was because the ongoing threat environment had, up until the spring, before our terrible attack in Benghazi, been a result of post-conflict conditions. That is something that we're familiar with all over the world. Yes, there were some attacks, as you have said, but our evaluation of them and the recommendation by the security professionals was that those were all manageable, because we have a lot of that around the world. I mean, there is a long list of attacks that have been foiled, assassination plots that have been prevented. So this is not some, you know, one-off event. This is considered in an atmosphere of a lot of threats and dangers. And at the end of the day, you know, there was a decision made that this would be evaluated, but it would not be closed. And unfortunately, we know what happened.
Well, it does seem to be a little contradictory to what she originally had said. But in any event, Senator Graham is leading the effort to block Hagel's appointment until, he says, Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, comes before the committee and answers the questions that they didn't get answers to from Hillary Clinton. Frankly, I think it's a little bit of a wussy claim, because there was no reason that she could not have been compelled to answer these questions while she was there. I submit that that was part of the unwillingness of the Republicans to press against a person who was seen to be very popular. And of course, it would have been politically unseemly for the men, Republican men, to be beating up on the former first lady. So for all kinds of purposes, I think they backed away. So I don't think it was because Hillary Clinton was that brilliant maneuvering her way out of answering questions. I just think it was that the people who wanted to answer questions deferred on the political grounds that they would have seemed to be a little bit too pushy, and they may have gotten backlash from that, being seen as beating up on poor Hillary Clinton, and she was just doing her job. Well, we'll see how that turns out, but that's in play. Also in play, of course, is the issue of gun control, and there are hearings already going on today. The Senate Judiciary Committee holds the first hearings on gun control today, with testimony from high-caliber, pardon the pun, witnesses on both sides of the issue, and President Obama's proposals expecting to draw heavy fire. Retired astronaut Mark Kelly, the husband of Gabrielle Giffords, the former Arizona congresswoman injured critically in a 2011 shooting, will be calling for tighter governmental controls of firearms. He's already testified. And National Rifle Association CEO Wayne LaPierre will be taking aim at the president's proposals. Meanwhile, in a related development, human rights activist Harry Belafonte, delivering a talk yesterday at the Rhode Island School of Design about his life and accomplishments, said that the African-American voice in the gun control issue is missing. He says that the leaders of the community, especially the elected officials representing African-American communities across the nation, ought to, quote, stir it up, unquote, on the issue because it so disproportionately affects them. And now we go to the big story of the day, and that is immigration reform. President Obama went stumping campaign style yesterday to drum up support for passage of his proposals on immigration reform. He appeared at a rally in Las Vegas, Nevada, yesterday as a prelude to Senate Judiciary Committee hearings that began today. The House begins its hearings on February the 5th. A bipartisan group of legislators, not to be outdone, beat the president to the punch yesterday and presented their working framework for immigration reform on Monday. Here's the president speaking at Del Sol High School in Las Vegas, saying, quote, now is the time, unquote, to pass the legislation.
Those of you who have a seat, feel free to take a seat. I don't mind. I love you back. Now, last week I had the honor of being sworn in for a second term as President of the United States. And during my inaugural address, I talked about how making progress on the defining challenges of our time doesn't require us to settle every debate or ignore every difference that we may have, but it does require us to find common ground and move forward in common purpose. It requires us to act. I know that some issues will be harder to lift than others. Some debates will be more contentious. That's to be expected. But the reason I came here today is because of a challenge where the differences are dwindling, where a broad consensus is emerging, and where a call for action can now be heard coming from all across America. I'm here today because the time has come for common sense, comprehensive immigration reform. The time is now. Now's the time. Now's the time. Now's the time. Now's the time. I'm here because I'm here because most Americans agree that it's time to fix a system that's been broken for way too long. I'm here because business leaders, faith leaders, labor leaders, law enforcement, and leaders from both parties are coming together to say now is the time to find a better way to welcome the striving, hopeful immigrants who still see America as the land of opportunity. Now's the time to do this so we can strengthen our economy and strengthen our country's future. Think about it. We define ourselves as a nation of immigrants. That's who we are, in our bones. The promise we see in those who come here from every corner of the globe, that's always been one of our greatest strengths. It keeps our workforce young, it keeps our country on the cutting edge, and it's helped build the greatest economic engine the world has ever known. After all, immigrants helped start businesses like Google and Yahoo. They created entire new industries that in turn created new jobs and new prosperity for our citizens. In recent years, 1 in 4 high-tech startups in America were founded by immigrants. 1 in 4 new small business owners were immigrants, including right here in Nevada, folks who came here seeking opportunity and now want to share that opportunity with other Americans. But we all know that today we have an immigration system that's out of date and badly broken, a system that's holding us back instead of helping us grow our economy and strengthen our middle class. Right now, we have 11 million undocumented immigrants in America. 11 million men and women from all over the world who live their lives in the shadows. Yes, they broke the rules. They crossed the border illegally. Maybe they overstayed their visas. Those are the facts. Nobody disputes them. But these 11 million men and women are now here. Many of them have been here for years. And the overwhelming majority of these individuals aren't looking for any trouble. They're contributing members of the community. They're looking out for their families. They're looking out for their neighbors. They're woven into the fabric of our lives. Every day, like the rest of us, they go out and try to earn a living. Often they do that in a shadow economy, a place where employers may offer them less than the minimum wage or make them work overtime without extra pay. And when that happens, it's not just bad for them, it's bad for the entire economy. Because all the businesses that are trying to do the right thing, that are hiring people legally, paying a decent wage, following the rules, they're the ones who suffer. They've got to compete against companies that are breaking the rules. And the wages and working conditions of American workers are threatened too. So if we're truly committed to strengthening our middle class and providing more ladders of opportunity to those who are willing to work hard to make it into the middle class, we've got to fix the system. We have to make sure that every business and every worker in America is playing by the same set of rules. We have to bring this shadow economy into the light so that everybody's held accountable. Businesses for who they hire, and immigrants for getting on the right side of the law. That's common sense. And that's why we need comprehensive immigration reform. There's another economic reason why we need reform. It's not just about the folks who come here illegally and have the effect they have on our economy. It's also about the folks who try to come here legally but have a hard time doing so and the effect that has on our economy. Right now, there are brilliant students from all over the world sitting in classrooms at our top universities. They're earning degrees in the fields of the future, like engineering and computer science. But once they finish school, once they earn that diploma, there's a good chance they'll have to leave our country. Now think about that. Intel was started with the help of an immigrant who studied here and then stayed here. Instagram was started with the help of an immigrant who studied here and then stayed here. Right now in one of those classrooms, there's a student wrestling with how to turn their big idea, their Intel or Instagram, into a big business. We're giving them all the skills they need to figure that out. But then we're going to turn around and tell them to start that business and create those jobs in China or India or Mexico or someplace else. That's not how you grow new industries in America. That's how you give new industries to our competitors. That's why we need comprehensive immigration reform.
Well, that's President Obama talking at Del Sol High School out in Las Vegas, Nevada. Okay, so we have three things kind of linked together insofar as all of these initiatives essentially land on his desk. And all of these initiatives were or are the starting point of what seems to be a brisk effort to make the second term count. And the president is out front basically driving public awareness and hopefully the members of Congress to become fully engaged as he exhorts the public also to do the same. However, our exercise today is to take a look at all three things. They are related in some way or the other, and that's your job. Your job is to see what is not being said about all of these things. What do they have in common? How is it that the president is a factor, a very important factor, in all three things? We will be discussing this in detail. I would look for your analysis right after this short break and your calls at 888-874-4888. Again, just to repeat, we are looking for an analysis of just how the president is positioning himself with respect to these three particular issues and how it bodes for his immediate future as the President of the United States in his second term. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are about to enter this new segment with a discussion of how we see the president, what is going on, why these particular issues, and how is he situated with respect to these issues. Why is it that the president is going to be dealing with gun control, immigration, and still Benghazi? What's happening here? What's your view? There's something very important going on. And of course, you must remember that we always try to pay attention to what is not said. Okay, we just heard what was said. That's great. It's wonderful. But we're interested in what is not said. So what is not being said about the president as he grapples with these issues nationwide? In the second term, I've already given you three good hints. Make the best use of them that you possibly can in offering your analysis. 888-874-4888. I know you have bright minds out here listening to Lead Stories and listening to PRN generally. So let's see some evidence of your brilliant analysis. Give me a call and let's have a chat about that. The thing is, we always have to pay attention to context. We have to pay attention to context. The news is usually presented in a way where, you know, it's lifted out of context. And each incident or each event or each issue is a kind of standalone object. But when you place things into context, they have greater, deeper meaning. It is not accidental that these issues are presenting themselves to the public now as the first leg of the legislative race between the president and Congress. It's not accidental at all. So I want to know from you, what do you say is significant about these three particular issues and the fact that these would be the first issues that the president is going to be dealing with in his second term? Let's see. Whose bright mind will we be talking with next? Don't be shy. This is not time to be shy. Step forward and offer your analysis. This is what this program is all about. You have to be participating in it. We got to hear from you and throw your two cents in. See what you have to say. Because I know that some people are shy and some people are. I got several notes from you. I got a lot of feedback yesterday about the program. Thank you very much for that. And I have also gotten the hint that many people are listening at work and can't easily participate by phone. So I appreciate that. But we still can get from many of you some contribution, because this is meant to be a gathering place for the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. This is community property. So everybody has the opportunity to make a contribution. It is a very important thing that is happening right now before our very eyes. And we have to make a note of it, because it is, in fact, going to end up as part of history a couple of years from now, when the books are written and so forth, and when the president writes his autobiography and submits his papers to some library or the other that's named after him. What is happening right now is very historic. And it speaks to, I'll give you another hint, it speaks to the cleavage, the historical cleavage that still remains very, very, very much a part of American life. You know what it is. Michael, hello.
Eugene, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
I think, first of all, I think gun control, the Hagel confirmation, and the immigration issue, I think they all do have something in common, and I think that these issues were chosen on purpose by Obama and his staff and the people around him, and I think they chose them. First of all, gun control wasn't even on the horizon as an issue, major issue, until Newtown. So he jumped on that because it had something in common with other things that he's pursuing, and I think it has to do with his trying to be a populist. I think each one of these issues can be, he can get on the side of feeling like he's in the populist mode, and that people will see him as a populist, and he'll be popular.
And I think a popular populist.
And I think he's chosen a side, and it's a side that he feels from pollsters and everybody that does these things that he's taking the side of the popular proposition here, and that people that have come up against him, that will, Republican certain people can be marginalized as and be unpopular. So I think that each one of these issues can be seen that, for example, Hagel is going to be an he's going to be against moving aggressively like the George Bush did in preventative wars and things like that. He's a non-interventionist. That's going to be popular now after we've been through all that we've been through. Hagel is going to have a lot of fire thrown at him, by Republicans and the people who are, you know, pro-Israel, etc. But I still feel that if he's on the popular side with Hegel, even though he you know, stands a chance of not being confirmed. Immigration, I think also, because of all we've been through and everything else, it's going to be a popular issue for him. Not the least of which is because, you know, he'll strengthen his ties with the minority populations in the U.S. And gun control, I think also people are fed up with what they see and the violence and everything. So that's very popular. So that's what I see. I mean, maybe this is not an in-depth kind of analysis.
No, I mean, you're making a very, very significant point. I just want to ask you about this word that you've used quite a few times, populist. You're suggesting that he's going to be, he's using these issues in order to cast a more populist profile. The inference, therefore, is that he's something else.
Well, I think that's true. I think this is a very surface kind of analysis in the terms of, yes, he wants to put on a mask, you know, he wants to do that and look very popular and be on the right side of the issues that are all polling, I'm sure, very good. And, of course, you got virulent opposition, which is only going to point out, you know, just point up what I think that he wants, you know, that he's going to be on the right side of these issues, according to the most of the population.
So are you suggesting that...
solidifying the Democratic view, I guess.
Are you suggesting that taking a, as you call it, a populist view masks something that the president isn't really? He isn't really a populist?
No, I don't think so at all. I think he's chosen his side a long time ago. I think he's basically like the Clintons, a corporate Democrat. I think that he's for strengthening all the things that George Bush put in place in terms of the national security state. I think that in actuality, that, you know, we're losing our freedoms. I bet with each one of these things that's going on, with each one of these issues, we're going to be shaved a little bit more of our freedoms are going to be, you know, taken away. I'm sure the immigration, you know, reform is going to look, you know, great, but somewhere in there we're going to lose some freedoms. So there's going to be some, you know, where are your papers kind of thing.
Well, Michael, you got us off to a very good start. Thank you. You were very insightful and incisive. And thanks so much for your contribution. We go next to Rudy from Montreal. Hello, Rudy.
Hello, Utris. I'd first like to say that I believe that your radio station should win the Nobel Prize for Medicine and Peace. You certainly are contributing vastly to the knowledge of people, and you certainly would deserve it.
I think, thank you, in behalf of Gary Null, who is the visionary behind the Progressive Radio Network. He saw the need for this kind of an information, an agency of information quite a while ago and got it started. So kudos to him for having the vision to do that. But now let's get to the subject and what your contribution is going to be. What is your analysis?
What amazed me most is that I believe that what is really behind all this is so much of the soldiers and women and men in arms are coming back with such terrible sicknesses and so on, that what they want is more cannon fodder. And that's why they want to maintain the immigrants. The other point that really astounded me is why so much of the 25% of the student body is responsible for so much of the discoveries. What is wrong with the student body of the American people? And what struck me is that foreign students generally, in Obama's father himself were subsidized.
You're onto something here.
Yeah, was subsidized by the governments, and yet the American student bodies are weighed down by massive debt just to go to universities.
So therefore,
I didn't hear the president.
How do you, with that in mind, how therefore are you to are we to interpret the president's appearance at Del Sol High School in Las Vegas?
That's another very good point. Why wouldn't you be in a renowned institution? Not that I'm saying that the high school is not the place to be, but at a renowned institution with some of the most brilliant minds in the country giving this particular speech. You've raised a very good point, too. That's what shocked me.
Well, it is because I think Michael introduced us to the idea of the president as populist and the president basically responding to a distinct constituency, and that is the Latino community, who basically had been pressing for immigration reform. But what is significant about what the president is talking about in terms of immigration? Has anything struck you in particular, Rudy?
Well, yes. The other point that I was amazed is that the problem is that exploitation of peoples from immigrants. And the fact is that if this exploitation were to stop, then the fact is that the people themselves in the country would do well enough without the necessity of immigration, that they would have the capabilities, the funds, the courage, the strength to carry out whatever is possible. But this would go against business interests, because business interest is the quickest possible profit in the shortest possible time with the least possible costs. So is that good for employment? Not at all. You want to fill your treasury, and the hell with the rest of the situation, the hell with employment. As soon as the president announces 50,000 new jobs, private industry, even though they're profitable, go around saying, well, hey, man, we're going to lay off 100,000 people. So what have we achieved? Anyways, that's my point of view.
Okay.
Thank you
so much. Thank you for your contribution. I really appreciate your call. Well, yes, we have yet another interesting set of facts and opinions to consider. Now, if I can ask the next caller, whoever that would be, to answer this additional question. Which group of immigrants isn't being discussed? What sector of the immigrant population is not being addressed, and why? We're getting somewhere. I mean, this is how we have to just decipher everything. You disassemble it. It comes in neat packages. The president shows up. You heard the rally. It sounded just like he was running, right? It sounded like he was in the throes of his presidential campaign. But the president has a particular purpose, and there's a reason why he's going to a high school in Nevada, and a reason why he's talking about immigration in terms of the contributions, the intellectual properties, you know, that we have as a result of immigration. He's talking about the contributions of immigrants. He's not referring to anything having to do with him. he's looking on as an interested party, but not as himself, as someone intimately familiar with the process of immigration, because of course that would raise some you know, issues that he would not like to deal with right now. But I'm referring to his father, of course. But we're talking about a president who is carrying a very interesting load at this point. Remember, he's in his second term, so he is all about legacy. And the legacy that he is indicating that he wants here, and I think Michael gave us an introduction to that, he wants to be a very popular president, a guy who is looking out for working class people. He never says working poor or working people. He stops almost always at the middle class, whatever that is. But he also is the figurehead for the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party, quiet as it's kept, is in trouble in the same way that the Republican Party is in trouble. Of course, yes, the president is a Democrat, and yes, he was brought into his second term with a groundswell of support. But the Democratic Party also has some serious issues that it needs to address. The Democratic Party has abandoned its political base in so many ways, and the Democratic Party is now a party of individuals working essentially on their own individual plans. The president, as a titular head of the Democratic Party, has to assure, because this is part of his legacy, he has to assure that the Democratic Party will continue to thrive with this energy that has been generated for his second term. He will have to show that he did his job as a titular head of the Democratic Party to assure its continuity beyond the next round of congressional races. Because the Republicans have already served notice that they're coming for the Democratic Party, and they are going to be doing a number of things to ingratiate themselves with a constituency that they had seen as abandoning before. So he is heading off that particular charge at the pass. He's heading it off at the pass. I'm out there. I'm for the people. The issue of immigration, nobody's been talking about refugees. And nobody's been talking about that blockage that has had people lingering in jails in the United States while their so-called status is being determined. We have not heard anything about that process, which is at the heart of the immigration problem. It is also racist, because many of these folks who are detained indefinitely happen to come from so-called third world or developing countries. And the atrocities committed against them in terms of their rights, I mean, you can write books about that, and many have. We're hearing about the nice side of immigration. We're not hearing about the downside of immigration. Who gets to have temporary protected status and who does not? Who gets extradited? Who does not? What are these laws going to be? What are the powers going to be of the department that oversees all the judicial aspects of immigration? You might keep in mind that initially what was then called the Immigration and Naturalization Service actually had one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to facilitate, to help people qualify for citizenship. That was their only charge. And then came the policing aspect that was thrust upon that department, which was to be an enforcer agency, which it was not equipped to do. Now that the enforcement aspect has entered as being a very important and vital part of the United States interests, because you must protect your borders, that is understood. But why is it constantly coupled with immigration? That is a policing aspect. That is a law enforcement aspect. It has nothing to do with assisting people in getting themselves settled as citizens. So the proposals as they exist still have a problem. And the problem is that they have not yet been able to separate the function of assisting people into doing all the law-abiding things that they do to become citizens and to become settled in the United States, as opposed to the law enforcement part of it, which inordinately and disproportionately affects people of color and people from developing countries. So that's it on the immigration front. When we're talking about the gun front, well, we know, we've discussed this, and even Harry Belafonte just yesterday said there is an absence of participation with respect to the African-American community, a community that seems not to be represented in this national discussion. Hopefully, because of his stature, they will pay attention and somebody would decide, maybe Joe Biden might suddenly discover that there are African-American people and their communities are inordinately affected by gun violence, and maybe they should be included in this discussion and debate. And when it comes to Benghazi, we still have not had any answers, and the president basically is now taking it on the chin because his subordinates, his cabinet members, specifically Hillary Clinton and Leon Panetta, have had nothing to say about the actual facts of what happened in Benghazi. And so he has taken this onto himself. We'll see how it pans out, because inevitably he will have to explain himself. And we got the word from the congressman. We got the word from the congressman that he intends to find out. He intends to follow through. So there's going to be a war. We are not yet finished with this discussion, by the way. It will continue, but we got off to a very good start. And I want to thank Rudy from Montreal. I want to thank Michael from New Jersey for getting it started that direction. Thanks so much. And pay really, really, really close attention to all these things that seem to be unhinged and unlinked from each other. They actually are linked. And there's a big picture that is unfolding. And we'll find out all the little pieces, and we will stitch them together, and we'll get a very, very good and authoritative view of just what is unfolding before our eyes. It's a very historic moment, and we ought to understand it as thoroughly as possible. I want to thank you so much for joining me today, and we'll come back to each other tomorrow at the same time. Of course, feel free to continue the conversation at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. And, of course, stay tuned for Jack Rasmus with Alternative Visions coming up next. Bye-bye.